Welcome to Conversations for Financial Professionals, a podcast to help shape the next generation of financial advice. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. Today's conversation is with none other than Ana Trujillo-Limon, who has worked in communications and the media industry for more than a decade and is the current editor-in-chief of the Financial Planning Association's publications, including the Apex Award-winning Journal of Financial Planning, the FPA Next Generation Planner, and the Practice Management blog. You will not want to miss this conversation about understanding the importance of financial planning, where Ana and I talk about why financial planning is so important. She even gives a page from her own personal playbook about why she hired a financial planner. We also talk about where the financial planning industry is headed and the impact it's going to have on consumers as well as providers of financial services. And we provided a checklist for financial planning in practice, something that consumers can use to find a good financial planner. And financial professionals, take note, these are the things that you can be doing to attract your ideal client. You will walk away from this episode understanding the real importance of financial planning so that you will have the tools to serve your clients at the next level. Let's get to the conversation with Ana. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of financial advice. And today we have Ana Trujillo-Limon. Ana, you've worked in the communications and media industry for more than a decade. First as a reporter and now as editor-in-chief for the Financial Planning Association's publications, including the Journal of Financial Planning and FPA Next Generational Planner and the Practice Management blog. You also serve on the FPA Diversity Committee and are the co-founder of FPA Latino, a member resource group for Latino FPA members. And you enjoy spending time with your husband and your two dogs, Zena and Baloo. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah. I'm glad to have you on. I, you know, there's been this weirdness of 2020 that's now behind us. Yeah. And there's just so many moving parts. I was really, really happy that you accepted the invite and whatnot. And I think we're going to have some fun today. First of all, we got to know this. I'm a fellow dog owner. What kind of dogs do you have?
Yes, I have German. They're both German Shepherd mutts. So okay. One is a German Shepherd. Zena is a German Shepherd Ridgeback mix. And Baloo is a German Shepherd Siberian Husky mix. So,
oh, okay. I have a Siberian Husky dogs. Collie mix also.
Oh, wow. How cute. I bet he's very, very furry.
Yes. Hair everywhere. Okay. So that's going to be a whole nother podcast that we'll have to talk about at some other point. So new year now, do you have any special routines or anything that you do when we leave one year and come into another? I mean, especially with this being a, you know, let's call 2020 an asterisk year, because I don't know that I haven't seen this in my years. What are some things that Ana does?
So this year, my husband and I, we usually do like a deep clean of our house and kind of rearrange and do new things. So we rearranged our whole house last weekend and did like a deep clean and got all our groceries set up and have everything so we could have a successful launch to our week. And that really helps doing the preparation stuff. And another thing we do is we try to have like a revitalized focus on our health. So my husband's a personal trainer. So it's kind of a blessing and a curse to have a personal trainer as a husband, right? So,
I can only imagine.
So we've been going to the gym. We don't usually lift weights together and go to the gym together, but we're trying this new routine out where we actually work out together. And it's been really fun. It's been a really nice way to start the day. And I just made a resolution. Like, I'm just going to listen to him and not resist what he asked me to do. And so far it's going well.
That's good for you and him, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Well, I think that's a good segue into the topic for today, which is planning, specifically understanding the importance of financial planning. And I think you are a great person to talk to about this in our short conversations prior to this. You know, I know that obviously you kind of serve, let's call them the providers of financial services in a way, because you have the publications and the blog articles and all the kind of stuff that we may provide to consumers of financial services. But at the same time, that magazine is not just meant for practitioners, but also shaping the way that we give financial advice. And you also have a financial planner. So I think you're an excellent example of what we're talking about today.
Definitely. Yeah. So for me, financial advice is just, you know, it's financial guidance that has the ability to change people's lives. And I've said it before in other podcasts I've been on, but I didn't even know what financial planning was really until I started this job. Like, I'd heard of it. I knew my parents had a financial advisor who was mostly an insurance broker with the title financial advisor. But it really is guidance that changes people's lives. It's just, it's an amazing profession, and it's really vital, just like your doctor or your dentist. It's a really vital, you know, service that you need to have.
Yeah. So talk about that a little bit. I think that you bring a unique perspective, not just because you're a woman, not just because you're a minority, but, you know, all those things obviously shape your money story, how you were brought up. And you say, you know, your parents had a financial advisor that was, you know, really, you know, probably more into the product sales. Kind of talk about your perspective as a consumer of financial services and a curator of all this financial content. Like, how has it helped maybe your experience as a person that uses the services of a professional?
So I think it's made me a more educated consumer, the job that I have in particular, like knowing better what questions to ask, or knowing it brought down that barrier and that intimidation that a lot of people feel when they want to seek out financial services help, because it is kind of scary. It's kind of like, well, I don't want to be embarrassed, and I don't want, you know, people to know I don't know things. But it's like, we don't look at any other profession that way. We don't prepare when we go to the doctor and be like, I need to know what I'm going to say to the doctor, so that way they don't think I'm dumb or don't, you know. So that level of intimidation that is there for consumers and potential clients in financial services is not there for other professions. So that's something kind of that, you know, reading more on my own and reading more at work has kind of helped me get over myself. And I think that's a barrier for clients and potential clients that we need to consider moving forward.
But where do you think that comes from, though? That's a, you raise a really good point and insight. That's a good insight. Because, you know, I just went to the doctor for some labs the other day, and I didn't, you know, kind of study up on my hemoglobin levels and my lipid, you know, panel. I didn't do all, I'm like, that's what they're there for. You know, I don't, right. Like, what do I need to know that for? And I don't feel that that diminishes me to an extent that I can't interact with that professional. But to your point, you're right. People feel that way when it comes to financial services professionals. Some people feel that way, that they need to know a certain amount of information. And I don't know, do you have any insights as to why people feel that way?
I think that there's this misconception that we need to know about money and about how money works and the language of money without seeking professional help. I think there's this, you know, I feel like there's a misconception that's perpetuated by social media. Like, oh, look at how successful I am. Look at this house I have. Look at these cars I have. And people give this carefully cultivated image that they're really good on their own with money. And I don't feel like that's the case. A lot of times these, you know, carefully cultivated images are just people in a lot of debt or people who do have good financial planners, but then they never say that. They never say, you know, my financial planner really helped me with, you know, my portfolio, and I really did well, and here I'm, you know, treating myself or whatever. They never talk about that aspect. I think it's a problem that's perpetuated by social media.
Yeah, no, partially. I would agree. What, if you don't mind sharing, what made you hire a financial planner? Because a lot of people would probably just look at your resume on the surface and go, why does she need a financial planner? She's like already in the industry. She probably knows a lot. Well, like what was the personal decision that you came to as to why you hired one?
Great, great question. Yeah. So I think a lot of times in life when we, you know, the more we learn, the more we realize, wow, there's more, so much more I don't know. Like, you can know something on the surface and feel like that false confidence, like, I really know things. But then you dive deeper. And the more I got into this job, the more I was like, I need help. I don't know what I'm doing. This is all very, very specialized skills. And just like, you know, when I needed help with exercise, I hired a personal trainer. Or when I needed help with eating right, I hired a nutritionist. I don't know what I'm doing with my money. So I hired a financial planner. And so that's one of the, you know, my biggest pieces of advice is, if you need help, and we all do, you should definitely seek out financial planning.
Well, okay. And you just made a statement there. I want to I want to stay there for a minute. You said, you know, if you need help. And then you said, well, we all do. I kind of think that, you know, and this is not because I make, you know, most of my living doing this, is that I don't know that there's a lot of people on this planet, not just in the US, but on this planet, that can manage their money and reach their financial goals without a tremendous amount of bias in the situation, because it's your money, you worked for it, you feel like you're entitled to this, that, and the other. And I think that is the really, really big obstacle that prevents people from making the best decisions with their money, more than anything, which is the reason why I say it's great to have a financial professional helping you out. That's the reason why I kind of believe no one can really do this on their own. Maybe it's a smaller percentage of the population, but you said everyone needs one. You mind expounding upon that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, the money language, right? Money is core to everything we do. It's, you know, it helps us buy the homes we live in and the cars we drive and, you know, invest in the future so we could help our kids go to college or help pay for things. It's central to everything in our lives. And if we don't know that language ourselves, and most of us don't, majority of us don't, and even those of us who do have blind spots, right?
Yeah.
So even planners need planners, because you have those blind spots. And I'm going to go back to the medical analogy. Like, you're not going to, you know, get some weird chest pain and then just look it up on the internet and be like, okay, I know what it is. I know I can handle this on my own. You're not going to do that. So it's the same thing with money. It's like, you know, I didn't understand the concept of compounding interest until I was into my 20s. And I didn't realize that the damage I'd done in on credit cards in college was so would have a ripple effect on the rest of my life. And these are things that, you know, if you have one impact on one generation, it really does impact the generations coming up behind you. And it has those relationships, because our relationship with money is tied into how we saw our parents do things and how we see our siblings do things, right? So even if maybe, you know, our parents don't have the best money habits, but then you have a sister who at 21 years old bought her own house and she's really savvy, those kinds of things imprint on you and have a ripple effect on the generation. So it really is an essential service to manage that central core money language that is central to everything in our lives.
No, I can't agree more, which is the reason why I'm harping on this subject so much, because I've worked with clients that have a lot of, you know, let's call it balance sheet wealth, but inside of them, they feel like they're poor. And since they feel like that inside, it dictates a mindset that creates actions that are not good for them. And eventually they blow through this money. People have seen this before, because, you know, athletes or lottery winners or all these people that we've heard that have all these millions of dollars or whatever, seem like they have their needs met. But then, because they don't have the education or the money, the correct money story that you're alluding to, then they end up losing all that. So no, I would totally agree with that. Let's talk about where you know, from where you sit, you have a really unique view curating all this content. I'm interested to see where you think the financial planning industry is headed. And I want to look at this question from really two angles, really from the angle first of the consumer of financial services, and then as well as the provider of financial services. Like, where do you see us going with this thing? And let's call it the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, so from the consumer perspective, I feel like, so you participated in our fintech issue. You answered some questions for me on, and so that stuff is fresh in my mind of the impact of the pandemic on planning and on technology. And someone brought up a really good point of that consumers are going to start to, you know, weigh their experiences with financial services with what they're seeing with technology in the regular consumer space, right? So we have like, they likened it to smart refrigerators and, you know, apps that can help us do anything and orders anything we want at any time of day. And it comes to our doorstep within a few hours, within a day. So those types of experiences are going to start to, you know, dictate what clients want from planners and want from their digital experiences in planning. From that perspective and from, you know, the planning perspective, I really feel like financial planning is going to start to have more far-reaching effects. I'm starting to see this trend of more people knowing about it and more people seeing it as that really true profession, like lawyers and like doctors. So I think that, we're going to start to see that more solidified within the next 5 and 10 years, that really solid finally becoming the profession that we've always wanted to be in financial planning. And because of that, I think that the different the models of pricing are going to start to, you know, be more diverse, because that's really a barrier to entry for a lot of people. And like I alluded to earlier with that intimidation factor, there's also that I can't afford this factor. Mm. You know, I don't have enough assets to do that. There's a lot of misunderstandings out there from consumers who think that they can't afford this, or that it's not for them, or that it's for only the wealthy or the 1%. But really, it's an essential service for everybody. And I'm starting to see, you know, different business models that are serving more of the majority members. Like, for instance, I am a client of Facet Wealth. It's a subscription model based company. And so that really was, it kind of got rid of that I can't afford financial planning services mindset that I had previously had. And it made it more accessible. So, you know, I tell my friends who are maybe, you know, middle income to the lower income spectrum, like, hey, you guys can really afford this. You should try it out. Just check it out. Have an introductory call. You know, so I think there's going to be we're going to start to see more of these Facet Wealth business models, more of these models that can serve everybody and reach everybody.
No, you make a lot of good points. I'm trying to see where I want to, or what tangent I want to go down, because I love the smart refrigerator example in that, you know, as a consumer, I'm just thinking about my own preferences where, you know, I have my groceries delivered largely. I have Amazon Prime that basically delivers everything to my doorstep. And it doesn't make sense really for me. I mean, I guess I could think about it this way, but in my mind, the more and more this evolves, I'm probably not, which is, I don't think I want to go sit down somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a perfect example. So my bank is closing. It's a subsidiary of a bigger bank. It's for small business owners. And I got an email yesterday that it's closing. And I was like, well, when? And they were like, well, it's not going to be, but it's going to be months, not weeks. But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, where's another online bank? Because I don't feel like sitting in a bank filling out paperwork, mm-hmm. because that's not my experience. That's not what I'm used to. And I think what I'm hearing you say is that financial services, although not totally there, like if you're coming in this industry in the next 5 to 10 years, you need to be thinking that way, because that's where we're going. With the level of technology outside of this industry. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah. And what I'm hearing from the professionals that, you know, are the true trend spotters is that the pandemic has really accelerated that trend. And we've all been privy to that. Like I interviewed Dani Fava from Investnet a couple of weeks ago, and she, you know, she's always so brilliant and so smart and has really great insights. And she talked about that. People, this is our experience now. The pandemic has made everything, like, just like you said, I don't want to go to somebody's office. Like my financial planner lives in my neighborhood and I've never met her, and I'm cool with that. I'm okay with that. So I think that that's going to be, clients are going to want that in the future, are going to want that. You know, people are still not wanting to go and interact and be face to face with somebody right now. And I don't know how long it's going to take for people to get over that, but I think it's going to be a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, traditionally this industry has been one where you feel that there's more tangibly that you can tell about a person when you're sitting across from them, as far as just, you know, picking up on body language, staring them in their eyes, things of that nature, to kind of pick up basically on whether you can trust them or not. That's basically mm-hmm. what it boils down to. And the reason why that barrier of trust is so high is obviously because our financial life is at stake. But I think I would love for your opinion on, you know, you said it just now. He was like, your financial advisor lives in your neighborhood, but you've never met them. So I'm assuming this has been through phone or through Zoom, in mm-hmm. which you've still been able to exchange that trust. So talk about that a little bit, and maybe why. Do you think that is that particular to your demographic and how you were raised? You know, maybe how old you are. Like, what are your thoughts around to how that trust is developed so easily, maybe with our age group versus older people?
I think that Zoom, like, for instance, we met once before this, and it was just like, I felt very comfortable just talking to you. I feel like I'm talking to you face to face right now. Like I can see your, you know, facial expressions. I can see your reactions to what I say. And same thing with my financial planner. Like we just connected, right? And it was that same, just talking and seeing each other on this is fine with me. And I think it goes In addition to, I am a millennial and I do prefer, you know, more technologically focused services, but I also am an introvert. And I know it's hard to believe. My boss recently told me, like, what? You're an introvert? Like, no, seriously.
Every time you say that to me, I'm like, whatever.
I have to really hype myself up and practice and do all, you know. So the point is that that personality perspective is also in play here. I would prefer to be in the comfort of my home and my little home office here. You know, I feel more comfortable to be myself here. And maybe that's why I seem so extroverted, because I'm in my comfort zone. I am, you know, this is my castle, and I am completely 100% myself here. But if I were sitting in an office and a big conference room table, I might feel differently. So I only ever had virtual experiences with financial planners. Before FASA, I tried out LearnVest when I was, you know, early on in my career. I tried out LearnVest when I was, you know, not making a lot of money, don't have a lot of assets. And it was not a very good experience. Like, the financial planner I did have, you know, it was via phone back then. It was not a video conference. And just like the way you make people feel is also a very important thing moving forward. And she kind of made me feel like, you don't make enough money. You need to get a side gig. You need to, you know, cut back on X, Y, and Z. And it was like, well, if I'm not making enough money, I clearly don't have enough money to be a financial planner. So I should just, you know, I have to drop this service.
Yeah.
So that kind of turned me off for a really long time until, you know, Facet Wealth came along and we were able to, FPA employees were able to have access to this type of planning. So that was, you know, that is another aspect of just the personality types, I think, helps build trust. Like, for instance, my financial planner also has a Shepsky, which we call the Shepherd Husky mix. And so that was one of the things, like her being able to.
Yeah, the common bond. Yeah.
Yeah, those commonalities that helps create the bond, but also the technology. This Zoom has been really, like, just like you said, for our February FinTech issue, Zoom has become invaluable. And to me too, as a reporter and as an editor, and I'm sure for financial planners, I think the seeing each other element is really great.
Have you ever wondered why doing something alone can be so much more difficult than with someone else? From dieting to working out to studying for a big exam, all these difficult things are better with community. That's why I've created the Jumpstart Community for Financial Professionals on Facebook. This group is full of like-minded individuals trying to improve the world of financial advice, and it's one of the first, if not the first, international communities for aspiring financial professionals. But don't worry, existing financial professionals are just as welcome. You're able to share in relevant discussion and find the accountability you need to become that next generation financial professional that the world needs and wants. I'd love to see you inside. All you need to do is search Jumpstart Community for Financial Professionals on Facebook to join for free. Now back to the conversation. I think, you know, obviously this the audience listening will be both consumers and providers of financial services. And I wondered if you could maybe share with us like a checklist, again, because of where you sit and your perspective, I think would be great, a checklist for consumers to kind of be thinking about what makes a good financial planner. And maybe these are some things or some items that from Anna's playbook. And before you say this, I want the people listening that are aspiring financial professionals to really look at this, because I think hearing it from a consumer can help you shape what you want or how you want to build your business. In regards to some of the things you just named, just the, what I call the bedside manner, you know, not making people feel, you know, stupid or like they're asking dumb questions. These things are very, very important in the beginning process, but I'll let you take the, take it right here with a checklist.
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. So I think one of them, we don't have like at in the journal or anything, any sort of checklist that we've developed, but I'm glad you said it was from my perspective, because that makes me feel okay. So this is what I do, right? So you have to, I think consumers have to be really diligent about, you know, seeing multiple people in the introductory meetings and seeing if you get a good feel for them, and then looking at your own needs and determining what is it that I need from this person. And then looking at that person's expertise and so I have, you know, a couple of kids in elementary school and I want to start planning for the college planning. Is this person, you know, well equipped to help me with that college funding? Are they helping with taxes? Are they, you know, and then looking at the certifications that align with those things. Like at FPA, we primarily serve, you know, CFP professionals and believe very, you know, diligently that that certification really helps you identify people who will serve your interests above their own. And so I've only ever had CFP professional financial planners. And I believe, you know, I always recommend when my family or my friends are looking for financial planners, like make sure you know, check to see if they're a CFP professional, double check on the CFP website that if they say they are, you know, yeah. So just things like that. And then this whole element of, like I said before, the face-to-face meetings to make sure you vibe is essential, because just like you said, money is a very intimate relationship and you're letting somebody into that. And, yeah. and it shows you more than just, you know, where you spend your money, how you spend your money habits. It all has implications, like psychological implications in a way. It all plays together and it can tell your financial planner is going to know so much more about you than your doctor, than your counselor. So it's like just by looking at your money habits. So finding someone you trust and you vibe with is really, really important.
No, I mean, I say this all the time, and I don't know if it's off-putting to people or polarizing, but it is so true. And it's the only really analogy that I can put it is when you come to a financial planner, it's like you're really getting financially naked. It's mm-hmm. it's very vulnerable. It's a very vulnerable place to be. And I think that's why it's so important for financial professionals to have also the EQ skills, the soft skills that go with this, because people are so vulnerable when it comes to their money. And there's not a lot of, like, in those first, you know, intimate moments, there's some things you can say wrong that will just totally, mm-hmm. you know, kind of kaput the relationship going forward. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I also want to kind of go down to the, you know, you said some things at the beginning of your list about finding the person that's right for you. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk around diversity, inclusion, and gender equality and things of that nature. And I think what it boils down to is if I'm, you know, whatever person, whatever walk of life I come from, it's very important for me to be able to see myself in my planner. And what I mean by that is people that share common goals, common interests, common values, maybe ethnicity. I think those are some very tertiary type of things, but values, you know, very much so. Can you talk about maybe your perspective on that? I know you recently completed a program at Cornell University about diversity and inclusion, and maybe some of the things that you pulled out of that program that kind of speak to how, as an industry, we need to do a better job so that consumers can look inside the industry and say, oh, I see somebody that looks like me. Maybe let me go check out working with that person.
Great, great question. Yeah. So in addition to the, you know, EQ element, there's a culturally competent element that needs to happen. And because we don't have the numbers of, you know, Black, Latino, Asian, all these different types of planners to serve the vast majority of people in the country who look like them, that cultural competence element is really critical. And I think over the last few years, there's been some progress, but I really do feel that we need to make more progress on this element because, you know, when we talk about things like systemic racism and the structural inequality that's out there that has impacted, as people of color, has impacted our ability to build generational wealth. If you don't understand those things as a planner and you go in and you're helping a Latina and you don't factor in that I make less money. Like, for instance, research has shown that Latinas make 54 cents to a white man's dollar. Like, if you don't come in knowing that type of thing and knowing how that has impacted my savings levels or the amount of money in my 401k, it has a ripple effect. These systemic yeah. problems have a ripple effect. And if you come in and approach me the same way you would somebody who's in my same position as maybe, you know, a white male who makes maybe tens of thousands of dollars more than me. And, you know, having those cultural competence skills to understand that will really help me see that you care about me, like mm-hmm. giving me, you know, maybe recommending tools like negotiation books or negotiation skills. Like, for instance, another part of the systemic problem is that I didn't know going into, you know, my professional years that you have to negotiate your salary. And so I'm a big believer in telling everybody I know, every woman I know, every woman of color, go in there and negotiate that salary. Don't accept that first offer, because that will have impacts on your lifetime wealth accumulation. So I just think that when we bring up, as people of color, when we bring up those issues, it might be uncomfortable, but just be empathetic and understand the systems are built to keep us down, and our successes are despite those systems. Yeah. And so understanding that is really helpful, and not coming from a place of defensiveness or like, that's so long ago. That is just, why aren't you over that? It's like, because it's still very much present in all of our systems. And that's why we're not over it. So no, understanding that.
These are good points, I think. I've mentioned this on a couple of recordings. We get the reach that we want so that this gets to the right ears. But, you know, I look at my alma mater, Prairie View A&M University, that has a CFP program or a financial planning minor. And I look at, you know, kids that grew up like me, look like me, coming through this, learning, you know, the greatness of this profession. And, you know, granted, there's going to be some bad actors in here that come, you know, through the school and try to get them to sign up for a job that, you know, is mostly sales. I totally get that. But at the end of the day, I do believe that, you know, exposure is probably one of the best tools. And where I'm going with this is, do you have some ideas around how we can take what we currently have in the industry and make it better to get more, I would say, really young people that have not yet been exposed to this or exposed to this industry to realize this is a great profession? Because, you know, if we don't have professors teaching this, because we don't have programs at these schools, then how are we going to groom the next, you know, crop of financial professionals that look like the, you know, the population that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And I think there are people in the profession doing some really great work in terms of laying the groundwork and building that foundation of financial literacy among, you know, kids from rural areas, kids like me. I grew up in a town of 800 people. We didn't have a stoplight. Mm-hmm. None of us knew about money, you know, mm-hmm. So reaching out and for instance, Tyrone Ross and Jamie Hopkins have developed a financial literacy program. And I interviewed Tyrone a few months ago, and he talked about getting this program for free into rural schools, into schools with high numbers of Black and Latino kids. And that, I think that work is so essential, because right now we're trying to reach underserved populations, but, you know, there's still this level of distrust in communities of color of the financial industries. And so
for good reason,
long game, for a good reason. And it's a long game. It's like, okay, so we're not going to see the high numbers. We're not going to see a ton of influx of people of color into the profession, because right now we have to build that foundation. Right now we're trying to build a mansion on a shaky foundation. And people like Tyrone Ross and Jamie Hopkins are going in there and doing that foundation work now. And we need more of it. We need more people than just a few people doing this work. We need everybody on board to help get these programs into the schools and go out there and talk to the kids. And, you know, it won't help bring people into the ranks of financial planning, but it will help bring more underserved populations, is going out to those, like, you know, HBCUs and Hispanic serving institutions, and talking to those, you know, medical students or engineering students, these students who are going to go out there and make six figures and not really know what to do with it. So that's one element going to like the Colorado School of Mines, for instance, where kids out of mines here just in Golden, Colorado, make six figures their first year. And my sister was one of them. So that's why that's the only example I use. And, you know, she recognized the importance, like, I need to invest my money. I need to buy a house. So she was on top of it, but not everybody is like her. So, you know, getting in front of these people, in front of these kids, and reiterating the importance of managing your money well early, because it will impact the rest of your life, I think is really some great ideas to do that. And then I think targeting professional organizations, like affinity group organizations that help serve professionals. Like, for instance, I'm a graduate of a fellowship program called the Latino Leadership Institute. And LLI has a partnership with Belco Credit Union, which is a really big credit union here in the Denver area. And they have, well, back pre-COVID had in-person events where they would do, you know, financial planning workshops and college planning workshops and different types of things. And because they had that sponsorship relationship, but if firms and big companies are able to forge those relationships and go in there and talk to these professionals, because a lot of people in my cohort didn't have financial planners. You know, I kind of like Rianca Dursainville said once in a retreat presentation she gave, she spreads a good gospel of financial planning. So I always have Rianca on my mind when I'm, you know, I need to tell people about this profession. So I, you know, I don't know that Rianca knows she inspired me that way, but I do go out there and tell everybody I know about financial planning. And I think connecting with those types of organizations is really critical too, to serving the populations who have, you know, past college years, already graduated well into their professional years and still haven't engaged a financial planner.
No, I would agree. On that regard, I think that's a good segue to allowing you to kind of talk about some of the resources inside of FPA and some of its benefits and tools that could be used by financial professionals in order to do some of the things that we're talking about, or to build their practice, or to reach underserved communities. What are some of the things that FPA is doing, or maybe that financial professionals can partner with FPA on?
Definitely. Yeah. So we're in talks with, a nonprofit based here in Denver to provide diversity and inclusion training to our members. So we haven't finalized it yet, so I won't say too many details, but it's like a cohort-like program that does diversity and inclusion training through the lens of neurodiversity and self-awareness type of mm-hmm. thing. So it works on your leadership skills first, and then teaches you those inclusion skills and marries the two. So that way you then go out back to your firm and create this inclusive environment. Because I think a lot of the problem is that we have a wealth of talent coming into the profession, people of color coming into the profession, but then they go into these environments that are maybe not as inclusive or comfortable, and then they leave. And so the skills to create that inclusive environment are very essential. And that understanding that diversity and inclusion are two totally separate things. So we have the diversity and then we don't have the inclusion. If you don't have both, it's not going to work. So that's one thing we provide. And then we have a lot of content, in the journal every November, we have a diversity, equity, and inclusion issue. So we're providing that type of content for our members. And we have an ongoing resource page, which I can send you the link to, which has just links to books and articles that we've written, articles from all of the trade pubs within the profession, links to Rianca's podcast, which is 2050 Trailblazers, which is really has some really great takeaways. Yep. Really wonderful guests. You know, Rianca and Lizetta both doing great work in this realm. And so anytime Rianca and Lizetta have something out there, I put it on that page because they're really doing the great work. But we're being more mindful, more cognizant of providing this type of content for our members. And we're at the beginning stages. The DEI issue is only in its third year this year in 2021. So it's slow progress, but it's really impactful progress.
No, I would agree. I think, and this topic, this is a big topic, and I really appreciate you for taking it on. Understanding the importance of financial planning comes from, I mean, you can look at this from so many different angles. I was talking with Bob Veras on this topic, and Mackenzie Scott just donated she's donated a lot of money over the last mm-hmm. several months, but she, you know, gave a pretty significant gift to my alma mater. And, you know, one of the ideas that I was thinking, I was like, well, this would be great. I mean, you got aspiring financial professionals in, taking this financial planning as a minor. Shouldn't we have some type of incubator for the community in that we could offer, you know, financial planning pro bono, give these mm-hmm. students the experience that they need so that when they sit for the CFP exam, they don't have to wait another 2 or 3 years for experience because they're already doing some of these things. And, you know, I know that there are ideas out there. It's just that I think there's way too much segmentation in our industry, and we need to work together so that the consumers benefit it. Because if the consumers benefit, everybody wins. And I think that's where we need to be headed. And so I really appreciate you coming on and talking about some of these really super big topics. This is in closing, this podcast, as you know, Anna, is to help empower Tomorrow's Financial Professional with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. In that context, what words or word of wisdom do you have to leave with the next generation financial professional?
Yeah, oh, that's a really great question. Let me get back to that in a second. You asked me about more resources, and I realized I forgot to mention, you know, a few really great ones that we have, which you reminded me of when you talked about the experience that the students could have. And we do have a really wonderful externship program that was spearheaded and launched by Hannah Moore. Yeah. So that provided, you know, a lot of aspiring professionals to get that a lot of their experience credit to sit for their exam and do those things. And it was a really, really interesting, we're going to have it again this year. And I'm really excited to see, because it was so well attended and well received last year. I'm still getting messages from people who participated.
Yeah, I think there was like 1700 people or something. I talked to Hannah about this. I mean, it was incredible. So that is a really amazing program. I'm glad you're mentioning that.
Yeah. And then we also have member resource groups other than FPA Latino, that people can get involved with. And so FPA Latino, we kind of focus a lot on creating awareness of the profession. So we work in conjunction with ALPA, which is the Association of Latino Professionals for America. So we have a lot of events where we'll have professionals come and do a panel and talk about financial planning and talk about the barriers to entry. And so those have been really well received and well attended. And so we have our Pride Planners, which is for our LGBTQ+ community. And then we have our African American Knowledge Circle. And then we're working on starting an Asian American and Pacific Islander group. So those are really great resources to connect with other people, to get those mentorships, because I find as a professional, mentorships have been really critical for me, and especially to get me into this profession and to keep me here. I'm not a financial planner, but I am here to stay as long as I can because of the mentors I've had in this profession. You know, some of whom, Sandra Davis is one of them, who I just love. Sandra, she's a gem. And, you know, the old editor of the journal, Carly Shulaka, is another. And so that segues into my words of wisdom for our next generation financial planners, is just to find those mentors and really learn from them. Really be, Danny Fava says this, be curious and ask questions and be comfortable with not knowing everything, because we don't. We really know closer to nothing than we know to everything. So just embracing that and acknowledging that, and just, you know, asking as many questions as you can, even if you think you're going to sound dumb or sound, you know, unknowledgeable, it doesn't matter, because that's how you learn, asking questions and learn as much as you can from everybody around you, because you really can do that.
Wow. Really, really great insight. Really, really great perspective. Anna, you're doing great work at the FPA. Keep it up. We're really, really happy to have had you on the podcast with us and sharing your wisdom.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been the highlight of my year so far.
We hopefully only go up from here. Hopefully we can only go up. Great stuff. Anna, take care and have a great one. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Dominique.
Hey there, I really hope you enjoyed this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. First, you need to write down your most important takeaway, and then you need to give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. Also, remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate it if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to join my free community to learn more about how you can become a next generation financial professional, please text me at 214-544-9226. I love to hear from you and point you in the right direction. Bye for now, until our next conversation. Mm-hmm.